So this is the modern email dev room, and I think I'm talking about something rather old, and that is star TLS. So this talk is titled Why TLS is Better Without Star TLS, a security analysis of star TLS in the email context. And this is based on research I've done some years back with Damian, so one of your lovely organizers here, Hanno Böck and Sebastian Schinzel, and my name is Fabian Ising. So since I have the honors of starting off this whole, well, the whole dev room, I want to give you a quick overlook of at least the client side of the email ecosystem. And this is a graphic I have designed for my dissertation, and so bear with me that the legend might not fit the context really. But that's basically, well, it's hard to read in that resolution, but this is basically a lot of the RFCs that go into the email ecosystem. No worries, I'll cut that down a bit. And I've basically identified three categories. One is network protocols. This is where we'll spend most of the time of this talk. So this is SMTP, POP3, IMAP, and nowadays JMAP, not included in the graphic yet, sorry for that. Formatting, such as Internet Message Format, and MIME, so the multipurpose Internet Mail Extensions. And lastly, end-to-end encryption, like SMIME and OpenPGP, which probably no one uses. That's really here. So in total, that makes up more than 150 RFCs. Yes, some of them are obsoleted, some of them are deprecated. But if you really want to get the whole gist of that, just the client side of the email ecosystem, you will probably have to read a lot of them. And I've done that. Been there, done that. So, and that's only one side of the medal, of course. There's also implementations. So over the course of my research, I've looked at more than 48 clients and more than 23 servers. And this is by far not all of them. So, and that's just the implementations I could get my hands on, and not counting the ones I found on the internet where I really can't tell if that is one of the 23 or it isn't. Okay. Since I also have the honors of starting off this protocol session of the email dev room, I wanted to give you a quick, well, introduction to how an email gets from our sender Alice to our receiver Bob. So let's assume that both use some kind of mail user agent, or what you would normally call a mail client. So for example, Mozilla Thunderbird. So both also need a so-called mail service provider. That might be something commercial, like mailbox.org or even Gmail, you know. And, well, that's basically necessary to get one email from the sender to the receiver. So Alice will first have to configure her MSP's MSA, or mail sending agent. So what she has to do in her mail client is basically fill out some kind of dialogue like this, put in a server, put in a port, and choose an encryption mechanism. Let's say, for the sake of this talk, that she chooses star TLS, or the auto-configuration told her to do star TLS, which happens a lot of the time. So then she will be able to submit that over SMTP, or submission, if you want to be pedantic, to the MSA. And Bob will have to do the same configuration with the mail delivery agent of his MSP to be able to connect via POP3 and IMAP. Yeah, and then he will receive the mail, obviously. So this is where we will stop for the sake of this talk. So I'll be looking at the first and the last hop only. However, I don't want to leave you hanging. So what's happening in between is mail transfer agent to mail transfer agent communication, which happens over SMTP. And I already put here be dragons there. And whoever has looked into that knows what I mean by that, because that's generally, from a security standpoint, considered to be a pretty hazardous field, just to the reasons how DNS interacts with that and how TLS works or doesn't work there, and so on and so on. So that's not what we will be looking at during this talk. However, I think the first and the last hop are, from a user standpoint, the most important hops, simply because your credentials are submitted over that. That means that you really, really want to have those connections encrypted via TLS if possible. Or not only if possible, you want to do that. Okay, let me give you a quick introduction to IMAP, because that's what I'll be basing my examples on, and on star TLS. So every IMAP connection begins with the client connecting to the server on a specific port and receiving a greeting back. This greeting consists of this asterisk and then a status code, in this case okay, and usually a list of capabilities. In this case, the server says, I'm able to speak IMAP 4 revision 1, and I'm able to do the auth login mechanism. So far, so good. The client will then send tagged commands, which consist of a tag and a command, as you might have guessed, and will usually receive some kind of data in response. So that's called an untagged response. And in this case, these are, again, the capabilities we've already seen in the greeting. And finally, to signal that the server is done with processing this command, they will send a tagged response with the same tag. OK, so far, so easy. Now, how does StarTLS work? This is basically the same as you've seen before. The client connects to some port, usually for IMAP it's 143, via plaintext TCP connection. And now the server sends the StarTLS capability. So that's the last capability here. And usually removes all the login capabilities because we don't want to have clients log in via plaintext. And then they will negotiate StarTLS. So the client will say, hey, I really want to speak StarTLS. The server says, yes, OK, we can do that. Then they'll do the TLS handshake, and everything after that is encrypted. OK, all our attacks happen here. So we assume that the attacker is a meddler in the middle that can listen on the network connections, that can modify packets, insert additional packets, and so on. But there will be no meddling with the TLS handshake, no trying to change any ciphertext, and so on and so on. So everything still happens in plain text. OK, at this point, you might be asking, so what is there even for an attacker to do? Well, an attacker could, for example, change this, or remove this, change this status code, add something here, or really do anything in between. So there's actually a lot of room for stuff to do. All of this accumulated in a Usenix Security 2021 paper with the same title as this talk. And as I've said, this is a paper from 2021. So most of the bugs I'll be showing you today are hopefully fixed. For most of them, we know that they are. For some of them, we are not 100% sure. But most of them are fixed by now. So the questions we set out to ask were, first, are modern clients opportunistic?